Hello, and welcome to What is Innovation? The podcast that explores the reality of a word that is in danger of losing its meaning altogether. This podcast is produced by Outlast Consulting, LLC, a boutique consultancy that helps companies use innovation principles to solve their toughest business problems. I'm your host, Jared Simmons, and I'm so excited to have Samuel Sanders. Samuel Sanders is an award-winning entrepreneur who has seen innovation, creativity, problem-solving, and ideation in action at many different levels. Fortune 500 companies, Inc. 5000 fastest-growing companies, as well as incubators. He also co-founded the company Wondershirt, which at its peak sold athletic clothing to Olympic athletes preparing for the 2016 Olympics. Currently, he runs Herd LLC, a software application that helps governments and large companies get targeted and reviewed feedback from their citizens and employees to improve decision-making. His award-winning and highly praised new book, Your Next Big Idea, is available at www.yournextbigideabook.com and Amazon. Samuel, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Jared.
I'm excited about the conversation. You've done some really, really cool things and seen a lot of interesting things, so I can't wait to dive in.
Yeah, me too.
That's going to be great. So tell me, what is innovation?
Okay, so to me, innovation is creativity put to work. Oh. What I mean by that is there's multiple different steps in the innovation process. And to start the innovation process, it starts with ideas, something creative, and then putting those creative ideas through a process to make it turn into innovation. And so, like you mentioned, I've watched innovation at these large Fortune 500 companies working in business development, looking at how they like grow and, you know, trying to see how they're looking at, you know, big ideas. And then Inc. 5000, fastest growing company, I worked in their R&D sector. So I'm looking at how they're thinking about new products, you know, what are they talking about. And then as an entrepreneur myself, I've seen this from the individual startup perspective, and they all like look at it a little bit differently. But when it comes down to it, it's taking those creative ideas and putting them to a process, putting them to work. And I think when it comes down to it, like when I try to explain this to people, the first step I always tell people is you really need to look out for those problems, needs, and wants that people face. So if they're facing a problem, there's a really good chance there's like something you could solve there potentially that would move into this innovation process. Needs, which I think is actually kind of interesting, because like when you think about needs, you always think about like water, air, like things we need.
Right.
Yeah. And I call those functional needs, but like there's also auxiliary needs, which I think is like interesting that people don't talk about a lot. That would be something more like, I really need a glass of water next to my bed, like before I go to sleep. And we're just so programmed into these patterns, like that it feels like I need this, like I can't sleep if I don't do this. And so if there's like any issues there, then that could be a real profitable need to fulfill.
Right.
And then once, like concerts, what people desire, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's a great framework.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of creativity put to work, because it's almost got a juxtaposition built into it, right? You know, when people think of quote unquote creative types.
Yeah.
They think of this ethereal, you know, not necessarily value creating sort of, you know, oh, this is nice. You know, they painted a wall or, they, you know, that's a nice mural or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah.
What does it do for society? You know, and
yeah.
And so I think that combining that concept of creativity and work is important. I think you're right. That's at the heart of innovation.
Yeah.
And, you know, solving these problems and identifying the needs that you're talking about. You can't do that with a sort of standard way of viewing the world and a standard way of thinking about building products.
I agree. And it's really tricky because not everyone is set up to be like a really creative thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of that is, you know, a little bit about how we teach creativity, and not everybody is set up to be the person that can push through, you know, like those type of projects. And that's often why, like, it's great to form teams. There are individuals that do both, and, you know, you can learn either side of it, I believe. So I think like part of the disconnect, though, is when we talk about like innovation, we're always talking about the big successful players that kind of already did it. And that's why podcasts like these are great, because then we can really dive in and like figure out what that means. But when you teach it in school, they'll talk about entrepreneurship and they talk about Apple or Facebook. Like, they've already made it. Like, you're not talking about how they came up with the ideas, yes, you know, the creative process behind it, the garage where they built the business. And I think that does us a disservice because it leaves a lot of people confused.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how exactly do I do this? Mm. You know, paperwork is important, you know, for starting an LLC and stuff like that. But, you know, what's more important is getting your first customer. How do you like get this, you know, out there? And so there's really kind of a disconnect there. And I think if we, you know, did a better job talking about creativity and talking about putting it to work, we would be able to find, you know, more entrepreneurs and creatives out there.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. How do you go about kind of helping creatives and potential entrepreneurs connect to this idea of problems, needs, and wants? Do you have a framework or, like, you know, because you talked about paperwork for an LLC and people can kind of wrap their heads around that, you know?
Yeah. There are a couple of different words, but two main ones I tell people, like, mm-hmm, quick tricks to find those ideas. The first is annoy. So if something is really annoying someone, like, and, you know, casually to our friends, we'll talk like, this was so annoying, it happened to me today, something like that. That's a trigger word in my head where I'm like, oh, there's a problem there that, you know, this is annoying someone. They'll potentially pay to solve that problem. And the second word I look out for is hate. Hate has a lot of momentum to it. It's such a strong word.
Yeah, it does.
So if somebody says, I really hate this, then it may not be the problem they're saying straight up to you, but there's something there that would, you know, definitely be very profitable to solve. If it gets that kind of reaction, that kind of emotion, you know, people don't like to be put in uncomfortable situations. So if you can find those annoyances, find those hates, find those wishes, like, I really wish that I could do something. Those are the trigger words to look out for. And as someone who is maybe really good at the pushing the process through, but not as good as finding that idea, I encourage you, look out for those words, because you'll be surprised how many, you know, different problems you may be able to discover there.
That's great. That's great advice. Phenomenal advice. Those are words that we, you know, you almost hear them so often that they kind of fade into the background. But if you can kind of retune your ear to be more sensitive to those words, they do sound like great markers for opportunity.
Yeah. And I think it's uncomfortable a little bit because nobody likes to feel and think about negative things, but like you said, opportunity, like, that's the mindset we need to be in. We need to be like, there's a problem here that potentially there's an opportunity to solve. We can make the, you know, world a little better.
Yeah.
So if we can get into that kind of mindset where we notice these things and then look at them as opportunities to potentially solve, and it may not even be you, maybe someone else, but you know, at least you're getting your ideas out there and trying to make a little bit of an impact.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing you're pointing out is you don't have to find one idea and then force it to be big and work that one idea until it's something. You know, I think sometimes people put too much pressure on that first insight or the first thought that they have. And that's why I love the title of your book, Your Next Big Idea, because it really just kind of already puts out there, there's going to be another one. Ideas are very plentiful.
Yeah.
And that's why I like your framework as well.
Yeah. There's such a strong feeling with your first, like, really big idea. It's almost like your baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really hard from, like, a mental perspective to take feedback from a non-biased point of view, because this is yours. This is your first thing. But one of the most important parts of, you know, the idea process and innovation is, like, sharing and, you know, getting that feedback, getting you, you know, those different changes into your idea to make sure that it's something that works. And that's hard when you look at an idea and feel really attached to it. There's nothing wrong with being passionate about your ideas, but it's just, you have to be open to the different appropriate kinds of changes that might make it and push it forward.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of times people get a little, like you said, attached, you know, and as a founder and an entrepreneur myself, I understand that attachment. I think for me, I try to fight being attached to how. I try to be more attached to the problem I'm trying to solve.
Yeah.
Because that is something that won't go away until you solve it. But I feel like a lot of times when people associate the idea or the concept or the, you know, problem, need, or want that they identify with, as they move into solution, that's where the attachment forms, is on the solution instead of the problem.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think, like, one of the things I talk about in my book, one strategy that I always throw out there to people is there's one problem you're looking to solve, but there may be hundreds of solutions out there that make sense. Mm-hmm. Like even like something like, oh, you know, I can't get to work today. There's so much snow. Well, you know, you could potentially walk, or we could ask, you know, the local government to put down more salt. There's like a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I always say is think about how you would combine solutions together, because so often we're just stuck on our own solution that we will just shove away the other types of solutions. But if you can either meet in the middle or even like do a combination of both of the ideas together, oftentimes that can lead to something that would help even more people.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I think combining solutions is something that's kind of, you know, it's really important, but not thought about often enough.
Well said. And I think built into that as well is this, and I talk about it all the time, people are probably tired of hearing me talk about it, but this concept of newness and innovation. And when I look at your definition of creativity put to work, you don't say a new idea that you came up with yourself put to work.
Yeah.
You can identify these opportunities. You can identify existing solutions in different domains and bring them into your domain to solve those problems or alleviate those needs, you know, address those wants. So I think that's important as well, is that your definition leaves room for, you know, you don't have to be the inventor of a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so true. And everybody has different passions and things that they want to do. And being an entrepreneur within an organization, starting something new, mm-hmm. also really great. You could solve something for a lot of people. You can be creative outside in your own thing. I don't want to limit the opportunities of where you can apply these ideas.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do them in a place that's comfortable. And then also where there's an appropriate amount of risk. Like if you're looking to start something new, it may make sense to do it within a company. You can get a lot of experience, you could train, you know, you'll have that kind of backing. And then maybe next time you can go and do it on your own. But it's all about that identification of what we think makes most sense to solve that problem. And then, you know, a little bit of what you want to get out of it.
Exactly. It's easy for people to just kind of turn on the television and see things about innovation and think, oh, I need to quit my job, you know, move to one of seven cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And get my Series A funding and do my this and do my that and all those other things. And that's a way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's just one way. And there's so many innovative thinkers, innovative doers in the biggest, stodgiest companies. And they love their work. They love what they do. They love their job. I think the beauty of your framework and structure and thinking about innovation is that it can apply to anyone in any domain with any goal.
Yeah.
And that's so important right now for people to hear, because this sort of rock star, unicorn creator, entrepreneur somehow become the definition of what innovation is. And I think there's a lot of danger in that.
I agree with that. And part of the thing with the book that I wrote is it wasn't for the rock star entrepreneur. It was to give the person that's not really sure if they can be creative, mm-hmm. or just someone looking to improve their skills, more information about how to, you know, go about that process, how experts go about that process, so that they can apply themselves. The more people we have thinking like innovators, thinking like creatives, thinking like problem solvers, the better we're going to be at solving problems. And individually, it's fulfilling to solve problems. You know, it feels really good to feel like your work means something. And so that aspect, I need to get series funding and then I need to go all that down that route, quit my job. Like you said, works for some people, but it's not the only path. And what's most important is that, you know, you're feeling fulfilled and creating those changes, solving those problems and getting yourself out there.
Yeah. Oh, well said. So we talked a bit about what innovation is. Can you share with me what in your mind isn't innovation?
Yeah. So innovation isn't a priority enough. Mm. Let me explain this. So often we talk about innovation. It's got this very buzzwordy type of feel to it. You know, we say it's really important. We, you know, put all of our press towards the innovation, especially like a lot of business press. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, oftentimes it's not a real priority. And here's why. Innovation and really pushing towards innovation is risky as a business. And so it's much easier to take what you know and grow it versus trying to really break an industry. So a lot of companies don't put the appropriate amount of time. And then as, you know, individuals, we often work with what we know. So it's like, all right, we have our job, you know, this is our safe kind of workload. Taking on something new, you know, that's a little bit of risk, and organizing that all together can cause risk. And so it's hard.
Yeah.
So a lot of companies just don't do it. And there are big ones that really make sure that they focus on R&D. And there are small companies that are really, you know, innovative, but a lot of times it's not a priority. And that's why a lot of companies get left behind.
Mm-hmm.
I have this rule that I wrote about in the book, and it's called like the innovation traffic light.
Mm.
And basically it splits the innovation process into a couple of different levels. So if you really haven't innovated in 10 years, that's a red light. Like, you're definitely in trouble of becoming a thing of the past. Like, you need to continually to innovate to stay ready and with your industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at like 5 to 10 years, that's a yellow light. So it's like, you're in danger. You might still be able to, you know, you should really be thinking about this innovation process and doing it, but you might still be able to be okay.
Right.
The interesting part about the traffic light, which I think is the most fun to me, is like the green light and the turn signal. So the green light is 2.5 years to 5 years, where if you have a good idea, just because we just changed, if this is really going to lead to more long-term profitability, lead to more innovation, I think you should still take the green light. And even if it's something that's brand new, a new person coming on, you know, you can have the turn signal. If this is an idea that really we think could make a lot of sense, you know, turn. So I think companies so often are just set in the process and they don't want to do that change. And it's expensive and risky, but the potential reward is very large. And the risk of not innovating is also pretty large. It just is hard to feel that risk on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, 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 exactly. The pain of the change is immediate and palpable. But the pain of regret 5 years from now, it's hard to help someone feel that in the same way. But it's just as real. It's just not as tangible. And so it's like anything else that requires discipline, exercising, eating right, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
There's pain associated with, you know, with those things. But it's the people that can really internalize what it's going to look like down the road, what lies ahead. And I think your traffic light is a great way for people to sort of distance themselves intellectually from that problem.
Right.
So that they can have some space to make a more rational decision, because innovation often becomes an irrational and emotional thing.
Right.
We like to put processes together and structures and talk about numbers and, you know, projections and charts and tables. But at the end of the day, it's like either someone has a stomach to do this or they don't.
Right.
Because you don't have, you know, we've got centuries of data that say when you eat these things, you live longer. When you don't eat these things, you don't live as long. When you exercise, you live, you know, like we've got lots of data, but there's no two innovations are alike.
Right.
And they don't happen in the same time frame. They don't happen in the same company. And so you end up kind of having to take a leap of faith.
Right.
And I think your traffic light is a good sort of grounding way to help people take that leap, or at least rationalize an irrational decision a bit.
Yeah. I think one other tip also that I like to tell people, which is a little bit controversial, but I think it works really well for, you know, my past management meetings and teams, is to bring in someone that just like doesn't really know almost anything. Mm-hmm. And so what they're going to do is they're going to ask questions and they're going to be like, why are we doing that? And oftentimes a lot of people will just be like, well, that's just the way we've been doing that. But that's the red flag. That's like, oh, we're just doing it because we've been doing it that way. That's where the innovation might need to be happening. And so oftentimes I love bringing in someone that's kind of new to the problem, thinking about it from a fresh perspective, maybe even different field. And it really, you know, makes it can slow down the meeting because there are a lot of questions, but it makes us think more critically about what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. It slows down the meeting, but it speeds up the path to the real solution. And that's the hard part for people to wrap their heads around.
Right.
Because those naive questions start to break down some of those assumptions walls that you've built up around that are capping your capability to innovate. If you, you know, always have everybody in the office all 5 days a week because you've always had everybody in the office 5 days a week, that's someone else's opportunity. And this is why, and people tend to jump to startups and all these other external ways of disruption another word that if I have another podcast one day, it'll be what is disruption.
That's great.
Yeah. But as people, they tend to look at startups and entrepreneurs as the sources of disruption. But I mean, you can look at Wall Street Journal, LinkedIn news. Disruption is happening every day inside of gigantic old companies. When you see someone say that, you know, we're going to introduce a hybrid work model, even if every other company in the Fortune 500 has already done it, within that company, because they've only ever done it another way, that is innovation. Yeah. And somebody, whether they were pushed into it or not, that's going to require the same framework around problems, needs, and wants in terms of how to make this fit your culture, your industry, your people, your way of working. So you don't have to quit. I just try to emphasize that. I mean, that's why I love your book. Is innovation is for everyone everywhere. You don't have to make some radical life change to start thinking more innovatively and deliver impact.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that creative adaptation that you talked about, where even if there are other people, even other people looking at doing those changes, it can really disrupt the process and feel like a really big step forward. So innovation everywhere. Let's do it.
Everyone everywhere. All
everyone everywhere innovates.
So how has innovation sort of shaped your career and your experience? I know you're an expert at it, but how has it actually shaped your life?
Yeah, I think it's really made me hone in on the thirst to like be more curious. I love these new innovations. And a lot of times, like, I'm not even involved in certain types of innovations. Like, I have a business background, so a science-based innovation would not be something that I can personally contribute to from a scientific perspective. But I love the curiosity aspect of it. I love the way that we're looking at new problems. And it just makes me more excited about the work I do.
Mm-hmm.
It just is kind of like a new exciting problem almost every day that you can just take a look at or read about, or, you know, even like a longer term problem you're working on. It feels like a really great project. And so I think this idea of innovation, when broken down to creativity at work and this problem, need, and want process, can feel really fulfilling and, you know, help make me more happy in my career, I guess.
Yeah. That's another theme I've kind of gleaned from talking to so many great innovators like you, is you practice what you preach.
Yeah.
This innovation thing is not just something that's out there that you're putting on other people. It is a way of thinking and viewing the world and a way of operating. And that's inspiring, and it's contagious and it's engaging. So it's really something that I think is probably part of your success with it, is that you actually, you know, you live this stuff.
Yeah. And I don't think it's so as foreign as often people believe. Like, you can take these kind of philosophies and apply it to, you know, your work. It just takes kind of that almost like the light bulb. So like, that's a bad example.
No, but, yeah, you know, I love it.
It takes that click to get the kind of thought process around about, oh, how does this work? And then you could kind of apply it and stretch it to what you do. So yeah, it's definitely, I think it's more fulfilling. I think it's something that, you know, makes work more entertaining and just, you know, help solve really big problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also gives you a sort of a way to start building the muscle memory and the skill set. So if it is your goal, you know, you're working at a job with the goal of quitting that job, you know, in a few years to start your own thing, it shows you, I think your framework and your book show you that you can start preparing for that next innovative thing by thinking innovatively today at what you do, whatever it is, and applying the principles and the way of thinking so that, you know, you start to build that muscle memory.
Yeah. And it's important to continue that learning process too. Like, it never stops. You just want to continue, you know, taking in more information. The more information you can take in, the better off you are a couple of years down the line when you go to make that jump.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What do you do when you're not innovating? What kind of hobbies keep you busy?
So I'm a big board game fan. Yeah. I love games. I just think they're like really fun. And the other hobby I have is I'm a big amusement park enthusiast.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like all about that thrill on the roller coaster, stuff like that. I like games because it's involved creative storytelling where like I'm playing, you know, in this world. And, you know, a lot of board games can do that in really innovative ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of also books, you know, when I read the, you know, do that in really innovative ways as well. And
yeah.
And then I just like love thrills. So, you know, taking those, you know, being in a music party, that's kind of great.
Yeah. No, your energy is, you know, I was not surprised to hear you say you like amusement parks. you've got that natural kind of kinetic energy about you. And I think that's probably also, you know, something that people factor into the way they innovate, you know?
Yeah.
You like immersive experiences, like through the gaming. You like that sort of adrenaline rush and have that sort of kinetic aspect to it, you know, as evidenced through the amusement parks. And that shows up in how you do what you do.
Yeah. And I think it's also like the cool thing about amusement parks is it's basically pushing your body to the limit to see how it feels. And it's really, you know, obviously if it made your body feel bad, they would not put it in an amusement park.
Right.
But what they end up creating, like to, you know, make the stomach drop feeling, you know, the wind through your hair, all of that stuff. It's really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, pushing the limits in business as well. You know, it's one of those things where you think about like, can I break this status quo in a positive way that's going to make people, you know, have those kind of positive feelings.
Yeah.
I never really thought about it until you started mentioning it. Now I'm like, oh, you know what? I do see that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a great called documentary series on the Disney Imagineers.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's on Disney Plus. It's 6 or 7 episodes, but they talk about how they conceived of the parks and they build the experiences and how they make them immersive and all the trouble they go through to years and years of, you know, design and development and insights to create that stomach drop moment when, you know, like you just saw someone else get off this ride, you know, you're not going to die, but
yeah,
they still find a way to create this visceral for a half second.
Yes.
You know, like that half second. And that's what people live for, is that half second of terror and then the release of being okay. And so I thought it was really interesting kind of watching that series on how they go about building that. A lot of innovation insights in that as well. Any advice, Samuel, for innovators? I know we talked about a lot about different things, but any specific advice for innovators out there?
Yeah, I would say that if you're too comfortable at any moment, then you need to start to make a change, whether that's like learn something new, try something new. The moment you get very habitual and comfortable in your habits, the moment that your brain goes on autopilot a little bit. So I definitely encourage, if you're feeling that way, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge step immediately. It could be something as simple as, you know, taking an online course with your free time, learn about something you like, something that just triggers the brain in a new and challenging way where you're not necessarily, I know this and I'm just doing this over and over, you know, get out of that comfortable feeling. And the more you do it, the more you'll like start to crave it. You'll be like, oh, I, you know, like I want to try and, you know, keep learning something new. I want to keep trying something new. So if you're in that comfortable feeling, then I would say, you know, just re-examine, see if there's something little, you know, start little that you can change, do 5-minute videos, you know, lessons and stuff like that can, you know, start to trigger that process of enjoying the uncomfortable feeling and really learning and trying to get a better sense about yourself and innovation as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great advice. I'm going to apply that this afternoon. I'm a 5-minute lesson on YouTube to learn about something. That's a great thought, my friend. Thank you for the time. It's been a lot of fun. It just flew by. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah, this has been a really productive conversation. I've really enjoyed it. So
fantastic. Your book, Your Next Big Idea, is out already.
Yep, it is out now.
yournextbigideabook.com and Amazon. So I'm going to pick up a copy and I'm excited to have met you. And it always gives me a you know, another context on the book. So thank you for your time and thank you for your insights. And I look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah, we'll definitely stay in touch. Sounds great. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Take care. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this week's show. You can drop us a line on Twitter at OutlastLLC, OutlastLLC, or follow us on LinkedIn where we're Outlast Consulting. Until next time, keep innovating, whatever that means.